Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Noon Show.
Okay, you want to rehearse it one time before we go on the air?
With award-winning journalist Cheryl Smith.
I'm good. I'm not that good.
Bringing you informative, enlightening, thought-provoking, inspiring, and entertaining talk radio.
Hello. I was just showing you some recent editions of Texas Metro News, Garland Journal, and of course online is iMessenger Media. Oh, how's everybody doing? I'm having to catch my breath. One of those move mornings. You're watching. I was just thinking, and I'm your host, Norma Adams Wade. Let me mention my mask, but I am not going to lecture you. I'm just reminding you that I wear mine. We're not out of the woods yet, but I am not going to pressure you or say anything. I'm just going to let you know that I had it on, and when I go back out into the world, I'll put it back on. Let's see. Okay. I do want to remind you that if you want to participate in our discussion today, you can write your comments in the chat, and I'll try to share them with the rest of the audience. You can also call in on our Blog Talk phone number, 646-200-0459. And press 1 and we'll let you in and you can give your comments. I'm going to move quickly to our first guest. We've got two guests today, but I'll go ahead and bring him in and ask him to not say anything until I finish introducing him. Let's go ahead and bring him in if we can. And I'm going to tell you to hold on until I let everybody know who you are. Okay, everybody, this is our first guest. His name is W. Kelvin Walker. Now, he is a corporate executive. He's a civic leader and a proud Morehouse a college graduate as well as Northwestern University, and currently he is CEO of the acclaimed Dallas Citizens Council. Now, he's going to talk to us about why Dallas voters should support Prop A. Now, you might be saying, what is Prop A? But he's going to tell us, and he's going to ask you to support Prop A in the upcoming November 8 midterm election on your ballot. Now, he'll tell you what that's all about and how it will benefit the various communities and the downtown area and so forth and so on. So let's go ahead and say good morning. Good morning, W. Kelvin Walker. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Excuse me. I am going to take this call.
Okay.
Yeah, hi. He's on.
Okay, I think we're okay. I thought that was someone telling me we were having some difficulty, but I think we're okay.
Okay.
Okay, let me just be sure about this. Let me just be sure. Can you hear me?
Norma?
Yeah, is there a problem?
Yes.
The what is what? Oh, he's, I can see him. We're talking. We're talking. All right. Okay, all right. Yeah, that was someone alerting me that we might not be connected, but we're good. We're good. I just could not ignore that. I had to be sure. Okay. Okay. So now you're going to ask the citizens to vote for Prop A on their ballot on November 8th. What in the world is Prop A?
Thank you for having me first, and I appreciate all that you do for the community. Proposition A will be on our ballot on November 8th for Dallas, for the city of Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
It is to have a bond election to create the funds that will renovate and upgrade some of our facilities at Fair Park,
uh-huh.
as well as give us the opportunity to create a new convention center.
Okay.
Where the K. Bailey Hutchison Convention Center is today.
Okay.
A $1.2 billion bond election is what we're asking our citizens to vote for.
Okay.
And it will be paid for by a hotel occupancy tax.
Okay.
So paid for by our tourists, not our citizens.
Okay. Now let me jump in, and I'll jump in at any point.
Yes, ma'am.
I think that is so key, because whenever you're talking about something that you're asking the citizens to support, I believe one of the first reactions is, oh, goodness, what's this going to cost me? How much more in taxes am I going to have to pay? So let's really stress that. So you're saying what I heard is people come and visit or check into hotels or motels in Dallas, they going to pay. But
yes,
the
ma'am.
Citizens who live here,
okay.
And you said something about, what else did you say, no increase or something?
The hotel occupancy tax is the way that we will pay for this. So
okay.
No income tax, no state income tax, no property tax increase. No tax on our citizens today.
All right.
To finance this.
Okay.
It will be financed exclusively by the hotel occupancy tax. So
okay.
If you think about when you travel, Norma, and
mm-hmm.
you get your bill, at the bottom you see all these taxes.
Right.
In Orlando or
right.
in Jacksonville. Historically, Dallas has had a lower income, lower hotel occupancy tax than most big cities.
Is that right? Oh, gosh.
We're just bringing ours in line with other cities and using those funds to finance the much-needed upgrades at Fair Park
uh-huh.
and create and reimagine the southwest quadrant of downtown by creating, by redoing and putting a new convention center where our existing convention center exists today.
Okay. Now, I saw somewhere where someone was talking about specifically how it will help the state fair, the Texas State Fair, something like even upgrading the bathrooms or something.
Yes.
Do you have any of that in?
Yes, much needed upgrades for our bathrooms, our concessions.
Okay.
And revitalization of Fair Park.
Okay.
If you think about Fair Park, it's really one of our crown jewels that we can use around the year, not just the 24 days of the fair.
Okay.
Upgrades to the Cotton Bowl.
Okay.
To bring it into the 21st century so that we can be more competitive for more games than just Grambling Prairie View at Texas OU.
Okay, okay.
Redoing our music hall, which is one of our crown jewels.
Oh, wonderful building. I just feel like I'm going back to the 18th century when I go in there. I love
right.
that building, yeah.
And we have to be competitive. bring the kind of arts that we would like to see here. And redoing the band shell, the Coliseum, and two of our exhibit halls so that we create more of a 12-month experience for everyone at Fair Park. So that's up to $300 million can be used for that.
Okay.
The remaining funds will be used to reimagine and create a new convention center that will be competitive with the likes of Atlanta, Nashville, Orlando, and others, where we can have very large-scale conventions and bring more tourism to Dallas.
Okay, now let me jump in right there. I am a Dallas native, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. That Kay Bailey Hutchison Convention Center sat for a good while just kind of sitting in limbo, unless I missed something. But what I hear that if we voters pass and approve Prop A, which will have the visitors to pay more taxes when they visit local hotels and motels, as a result, that K. Bailey Hutchison Convention Center is going to become a new shining star.
A new shining star. Imagine a much more vibrant area around the convention center where we can have even additional entertainment and restaurants.
Okay.
So there are things for our citizens to do, whether they're our Dallas citizens as well as our tourists who come to town.
Uh-huh.
And some of the initial drawings have shown that instead of having it be east-west, we could have it, imagine the convention center being north-south, going over I-30 and into the Cedars, and so that you create more of a space that can be walkable.
So it's enlarging, expanding the space.
Yeah. And bringing it up from a technological standpoint to the likes, to be competitive with cities like the ones I mentioned, others, big Sun Belt cities like Nashville, Atlanta, Orlando, and others,
right,
so that we continue to attract the large-scale conventions.
Okay,
and,
okay.
We're excited about it. We believe that this has huge economic benefit in terms of the job creation, permanent jobs. We can create over 30,000 permanent jobs after all of the construction is finished.
Wow.
And it will drive more growth and more vibrancy to the entire southwest quadrant of downtown and bring more people downtown, which I think we should do.
Yeah, now that whole issue of bringing folk downtown, because, again, you mentioned us in comparison to other urban areas, and I've always heard that we're kind of behind the scale in Dallas in terms of how we're using our downtown area.
I would say there's certainly an opportunity to do better with our downtown.
Okay. Okay.
When you think of 5-6 o'clock downtown, while we have a lot more residents living downtown, we don't have nearly as much activity after business hours as we could, particularly with the revitalization of the convention center and the other developments around it, private developments,
mm-hmm.
as well as what will ultimately happen when the new Dallas College campus is built. It will be very transformational to that part of downtown.
Okay, very good, very good. Now, I've also heard that that the price tag on just the convention center part is little over $1 billion or something?
Well, total price tag is $1.2 billion.
Okay.
Up to $300 million will be used for Fair Park renovation.
Okay.
To redo and construct the new convention center.
Okay. Okay.
And so that no one is ever confused, this is not paid for by Dallas taxpayers. This
okay.
is paid for by the hotel occupancy tax.
Okay.
So this
okay.
is something that can create enormous economic benefit and is not something that will tax our citizens.
Now, here's what I want to ask. Back to the Fair Park area, the Texas State Fair of Texas. I'm told that the surrounding community, now that's a whole topic when you start talking about the surrounding community for Fair Park. Now, I'm told that this upgrading and renovation and all like that, improvements, will benefit that surrounding area of Fair Park in some kind of way. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I understand it, and from my perspective, when you think of $300 million plus the private money that is being raised by Fair Park First for additional green space, beyond small businesses being able to participate in the growth and construction, we should create more vibrancy for the neighborhood without displacing any of those residents.
All right.
I think for a long time that area has been starved for capital, and I think one of the things we should do in addition to the bond election is continue to encourage what I would describe as responsible investment and development in the neighborhoods around Fair Park in ways that benefit the current residents.
Okay. Now let's kind of stick with that a little bit, and anybody who has been in Dallas for a while know the story of kind of bad blood back in the day. I'm going to say maybe the late 60s, early 70s, when there was a big controversy about expansion of Fair Park, and I think that was eminent domain was used, and residents, had to lose their homes. They weren't big price tag homes, but they were home to the people who live there. And it just really created, I think, former community, the late Al Liscomb, who was a community activist, led a bunch of protests and what have you. And so that kind of left a bad taste in the mouths of people in that area. But I'm hearing you say that this move forward would bring investment and development to that area. So was there much talk among planners about that whole bad relationship with the community and how to just really kind of try to clean that up? Because, again, the people who live there, they got to vote on this with the rest of the city. And so I think they have to feel that, first of all, they're not going to get messed over, for lack of a better term. So give me a little background on, was there discussion on this? How did y'all deal with all of that?
Well, certainly the history there is one that's long and storied and in many ways negative because of the eminent domain people pushed out of the neighborhoods. While we enjoy the fair and people enjoy the space of Fair Park, that stain remains.
Mm.
I will say that this financing and improvement is not, there is no eminent domain contemplated at all in this. This is about inside the fair, inside the grounds of Fair Park. This is not about moving anyone out.
I
just believe that this investment can highlight the beauty of this area and can create opportunities for economic development. And I mean economic development by services and restaurants, grocery stores, things that the current residents need in a way to make the area more vibrant, not gentrification that moves people out.
Okay.
This is about
take
a beautiful place like Fair Park, which is one of our big tourist attractions and something that's probably under-marketed and underutilized by our citizens, as a way to create more traffic to that area and more use for that area. I think that begins, if we're smart about it, both partnering with business and with the public sector, we make sure that there's responsible development.
Yeah.
The same things that people in the community of Fair Park would like to have in their community, the same thing that people in Preston Hollow or Redbird or anywhere else want to have. So this bond election is about improving something that we all care about, Fair Park, but then the surrounding neighborhood should certainly benefit from that investment and not let it be to their detriment.
Okay, now let me kind of clear up another point. And I, being a Dallas native, I kind of am sensitive to the use of the term Southern Dallas versus South Dallas Fair Park.
Southern Dallas is a region.
Okay, but now, so these investments and development, we're talking the South Dallas Fair Park area. Is that right? Okay.
Yes.
We're not talking about Oak Cliff or...
No.
Okay. When
no,
we
I,
see...
I was just mentioning that the same thing that people want who are residents of the South Dallas Fair Park neighborhood the same services and things they want to know different than any other neighborhood.
Yeah, but it's not just you. It's not just you. In hearing discussions about Prop A, I've heard some folk use the term that it will spill over and benefit Southern Dallas. But see, me, a Dallas native, and the rest of us, when we say Southern Dallas, we're talking Oak Cliff, DeSoto, all of those places like that. But this specifically will benefit the State Fair of Texas and that South Dallas Fair Park community that surrounds it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, the economic impact that can benefit all is that when you spend $1.2 billion in construction and services, I think it's incumbent upon the business community, and as a voice of the business community, we are continually advocating for meaningful economic participation by our African-American-owned and Hispanic-owned businesses.
Okay.
So that they can scale and grow their businesses in a way that allows them to participate in other projects beyond the this bond election, beyond the construction of the new convention center and Fair Park.
Okay, now before I ask my next question.
It's a much broader group of people than just a particular neighborhood.
Okay, I get that. Before I get my next question, let me just remind everybody that we are talking with W. Kelvin Walker, and he is the CEO of the Dallas Citizens Council. And the Citizens Council is a nonprofit group made up of about 150 CEOs and top business leaders in North Dallas, and they have an impact on what goes on in the city. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But W. Kelvin Walker, CEO of the Dallas Citizens Council, is telling us why voters need to support what is known as Proposition A, and it will be on the November 8th ballot. And he's just giving us a whole rundown of how this that Prop A will benefit the State Fair of Texas, the Fair Park State Fair, and the surrounding South Dallas Fair Park area, and the K. Bailey Hutchison Convention Center, and that surrounding area of downtown Dallas. It sounds very new agey and something we need to do. But let me just, I'm going to spend a little bit more time in that South Dallas Fair Park area. Now, the benefits you mentioned, like it could possibly, with investment and economic development, it's possible that that community could see more grocery stores and things of that nature. Am I correct on that? You mentioned it, but let's just...
That's correct. And it's not just because of the bond election that they... We should have a specific conversation about that, just period.
Okay.
There have to be ways that we encourage our larger grocery stores to do more business in both normal and creative ways to deliver the same grocery services that we have anywhere else in town. So that's, love to come back and have a separate conversation about food deserts and grocery stores, because I think it's incumbent upon business to do that, because we know in every neighborhood we all eat.
Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm. But specifically about this bond election, one of the other beautiful things is that it will create 50,000 construction jobs.
Let me say that. Y'all, did y'all hear that? This Prop A on the November 8 election will create, say that again about the jobs?
50,000 construction jobs.
Wow.
And that's both the convention center and the work at Fair Park.
Wow.
And some of those those construction jobs will go on for quite a while.
This
creates enormous economic impact for our region in terms of jobs and wages. And over time, just this will create more than $4 billion of new taxes paid into, over a 30-year period, paid into the city from the economic activity, not from Dallas residents.
Yeah, yeah.
From the economic activity. I believe it is a win-win for all of us. And yeah. I have to give you one comparison.
Okay.
We've used this same hotel occupancy tax to develop and build the American Airlines system.
Is that right? Interesting. Interesting.
And paid off the bonds early.
Okay.
What the area looked like before all of that was there.
Yeah.
It was a very smart use of using the hotel occupancy tax in a way that cost our citizens nothing, but we gained everything by having the arena downtown.
Wow.
Using that same exact, and I have to make sure I give big thanks to Senator Royce West as one of the legislators who made sure by state law
that
we would be able to do this.
Okay, so now I take that as a visible example of success. Listen, audience, when you look at that American Airlines Center, where it used to not be there, but it's there now and it's popping, that was put there by this same type of mechanism. And so you can look at it, and it didn't come out of any of our pockets. That's the key point that I see. So I thank you for sharing that this same method was used to bring us the American Airlines Center, and it didn't cost us any tax money.
That's correct. And we will be using that same mechanism, which will create jobs and create economic opportunity for our small businesses, for our minority-owned businesses, and in a way that, if done right, we ought to be able to create and grow more of our minority business ecosystem, because they have opportunities here to not just be subcontractors, but be partners with our larger contractors to do the work and grow their businesses.
Oh.
That way we see economic opportunity shared north and south.
Oh, okay. Okay. Great.
I think that's another added benefit just from the business community,
right,
side, beyond having an attractive convention center,
right,
and redoing something we all love.
Right. Here's a question that I have, and this is just a nosing Norma Adams Wade question.
Yes,
how does the public, you mentioned about these 50,000 possible job, I hope I said the figure correctly. The average person out there perhaps listening to our conversation, how do they sign up for those jobs? What do they have to do?
Well, of course, if you're in the construction world, you've got to make sure you have the right certifications and trades so that you can be qualified to work with the construction companies that will be hired to do the work.
Okay.
And that'll be public bid by the city.
Okay, public bid. Okay. Mm-hmm.
But when you think of the larger contractors, they'll all be hiring for this work.
Okay.
We are, as a region, when you drive around Dallas, you see cranes everywhere. All going up for construction.
Right.
And we don't have enough construction workers as it is today.
Wow.
For current projects.
Wow.
So the opportunity for those who are trained and those who want to be trained, there'll be ample opportunities through the companies that will be selected.
Okay.
For those who are seeking credentialing for construction, I would direct them to two places.
Okay.
First, to Dallas, through Dallas College.
Okay.
There are specific credentialing programs for each part of the construction process. And I'd also, two other places that I would refer them to. The Regional Black Contractors Association has a couple of training programs.
Okay.
They champion, as well as the Hispanic contractors also.
Okay.
And so I think there are numerous ways to access the education and training.
Okay.
At fairly low cost, given the way down, particularly the way Dallas College delivers it.
Oh, yes, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
So I'm a big fan of the way Dallas College does it, and it provides quite the opportunity for people to upskill in a way that allows them to access these opportunities.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I personally appreciate that, because, you know, you hear about these big building projects and you wonder, well, how do I, you know, cousin so-and-so or brother Danny, how do they get into that? So that is so key, and I appreciate you sharing that. And what I heard you say was Dallas College, and you can get trained and certification, the Regional Black Contractors Association, and I heard you say the Hispanic Contractors Association.
That's
so,
right.
Audience, if y'all have cousin Junior and Popo, direct them to these access places so they can get these jobs. And I heard W. Kelvin Walker say that even construction projects that you see going on now still don't have enough workers. So it's out there. It's out there for the taking. Now, let me move on to my next question. And I'm trying to get away from that South Dallas Fair Park area, but here's another question that I have for that. The community and the residents who are there now, was there any discussion with them about this? And a slash part of that question is, if there hasn't already been discussion with them, will there be still an open door where they can sit down with organizers and give their input on what they would like to see brought into that community? Anything like that?
I'd say yes and yes. There have been discussions. I have not been party to them, but I know the leaders at Fair Park First, both the chairman of the board, Darren James, as well as their CEO, Brian Llewellyn,
okay,
had many, many community meetings regarding the South Dallas Fair Park neighborhood in general,
okay,
and then specifically how they see Fair Park and how they want to engage with Fair Park and how Fair Park should be a better neighbor. I'm aware,
okay,
that has been an ongoing conversation.
Good.
Even before the bond election came up, and I'm sure that those conversations continue, that would probably be the first point of contact that I would suggest. But yes, it's an ongoing process there for sure.
Okay.
To make these decisions in a vacuum would be irresponsible.
Yes,
and not respectful of the history of that relationship as well.
And so Fair Park First, this organization, Fair Park First, that's the name of an organization, they kind of are spearheading the link between the community and the planners on this. Did I hear that correctly? That's one of the groups. Okay, very good, very good. Now here's another uninformed Norm Adams Wade question. I just want to get it out of the way. These projections on how much money will be brought in, how much it might cost to do this, that, and the other, how much improvement might be. Who goes about, who is it that estimates these things and determines and projects these estimated projections and figures? How do we come up with these, how many jobs it might bring in? Who does that?
Well, that's done in combination from a couple of groups. One has been a consultant that's been working with the city WSP to do some of the planning to see what does it take and what the construction cost might be, as well as planners and engineers on the city side, as
okay,
well, looking at not just the dollars that it costs to build it, mm-hmm, but also who do you have to hire?
Okay.
And then understanding project of this magnitude, what's the likely number of persons it takes to get it done?
Okay, very good.
It's sort of not one guy sitting down in the basement of his house with a computer. It's a collaborative process that gets to these estimates.
Very good, very good. Now, what would be the timeline? Should Prop A pass, and we're going to think positive, Proposition A is going to pass. The voters are going to put yes when they vote on their ballot for November 8th.
It's at the very bottom of the ballot. We don't want them to be fatigued with all the others. They get all the way to the bottom and check yes.
Okay, yes at the bottom. So don't give up, voters, when you're doing all those boxes and whatever you do. It's at the bottom. And when you get there, you want to say yes. But Proposition A, Prop A. Now, let me ask this. What is the timeline for when this would all come about?
Well, positive a yes vote in November, on November 8th. In 2023, we can begin to see work done at Fair Park.
That's about a year later.
Yeah, I'm saying, well, 2023 is 2 months away. away, right?
Well, that's true. Hey, you're right. You're right. That is a couple of months away. You're right.
Work can begin on some of the work for some of the venues at Fair Park in 2023, because they've been doing a lot of planning for quite a while. For Kay Bailey Hutchison Convention Center, it will take a little bit longer, but that's just planning in 23 and probably construction starting in 24.
Okay, okay.
It will not take a long time, but there's obviously to build something of that scale that will take time to hire the right firms and then get them approve the plans and get to work.
Okay.
But yeah, this will not take a long time to see the beginning. You're kind of 28, 29 seeing all of it finished with the convention center, because they want to do it in a way that doesn't tear it all down at once.
Okay, so that's about roughly five years we're looking at from going from point A to Z.
Right, and it should take less time. You'll see improvements much more quickly at Fair Park.
Okay, very good. Now, we're not going to let you go. You're my captive audience, so I've got a couple of more things, but let me go ahead and make these announcements, and you can elaborate on it. But audience, there are two upcoming events about Prop A and that we want you to know about. Now, this organization is called Transforming Dallas. It's the Transforming Dallas Committee, and they will host two upcoming events in support of a yes vote for Prop 8. Now, this first one is tomorrow. The first one is at 10:30 a.m. tomorrow, October 20th, and it's called the Early Voting Awareness Event. Guess where it is? It's at St. Luke Community United Methodist Church. Y'all know where St. Luke is. St. Luke Community United Methodist Church, 5710 East R.L. Thornton. Now, the speakers will include Adam Bazadua, St. Luke's pastor, Ricky Butler, and Linda Mayberry. They're going to be, that's three main speakers, and they're going to talk about this whole early voting awareness, and they'll talk about the importance of Prop A, why you need to support it. That's the first thing. Now, that's tomorrow, y'all, 10:30 a.m. at St. Luke. And then the second thing is Thursday, October 27th. That's next week, also at 10 a.m. And this is a community-wide advocacy event that's going to talk about Prop A and the whole early voting and the voting and the importance of November 8th, but certainly give us more information about Prop A, and you can ask questions and what have you. This one will be Thursday, October 27th at 10 a.m. at Two Partners, right there across from Fair Park, at Two Partners Restaurant, and that's 1441 Robert B. Cullum Boulevard. And there will be various community leaders and elected officials that will be at that. So y'all want to put those two events on your calendar, the one tomorrow, 10:30 at St. Luke. That's the October 20th. And then the one next Thursday, October 27th at 10 a.m. at Two Partners right across from Fair Park. Now, let me just remind y'all that we're talking with W. Kelvin Walker. He is the CEO of the Dallas Citizens Council, which is a nonprofit organization of more than 150 CEOs and top business leaders in North Texas. And we'll learn a little bit more about them. And he is talking about why we need to support Prop A, Proposition A, which is going to be on the November 8th ballot. And basically, the two entities that will benefit from it are Fair Park and lots of renovation there, and the K. Bailey Hutchison Convention Center and surrounding area of the convention center, surrounding area of Fair Park. And it won't cost local voters any increase in taxes. It will come out of taxing hotel and motel visitors. Now, before we move on to the next part of my questioning. Any other points you want to make that we didn't make about Prop A?
I think you just did a fabulous job of all my talking points. I think that's correct. I mean, this is our opportunity to really transform downtown and Fair Park without it costing our citizens anything.
Great.
So we're excited about it.
Great, 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 great. Okay, now I want to talk about the Dallas Citizens Council. I want to talk about them. Now, of the Dallas Citizens Council, anybody who grew up in Dallas knew that it's been kind of a love-hate relationship. But I'm seeing so much transformation with the DCC these days. And I have to say, y'all are cleaning up some mess. Because in the African-American community, the Dallas Citizen Council was not beloved, even though y'all historically had been doing a lot of good stuff, But it just kind of wasn't perceived. So I want to I want you to tell us from your vantage point, what's the purpose of the Dallas Citizens Council?
Sure. We are celebrating our 85th year, and okay. We are a civic organization with our purpose being focused on leading and serving in what we call the moments that matter most for Dallas.
Okay.
We want to be, by using the scale and the reach of our members, the CEOs of large and influential companies, do things that will help Dallas continue to be a very vibrant and competitive city, okay. And a place where people want to move to and a place where people who live here perceive they have an opportunity to succeed.
Okay.
And we do that by three priorities that we've created over the years. These three were championed by Fred Perpall, actually our first African-American serving board chair. Our very first board chair who would have been African-American was John Ware, but John Ware passed away just as he would have started his time.
I didn't realize that timing. I knew about his death and his prominence, but I didn't realize about his potential power that he would have held with the council. Yeah. Go ahead.
So our first priority is to promote inclusive growth for all of Dallas. Mm-hmm. So what do we mean by that? We know that intelligence is distributed equally, but opportunity has not been.
Okay.
So we know that we have to promote ways for opportunities to be more inclusive in education, transportation, housing, and our overall quality of life. And we do that through our advocacy with our elected leaders and our focus on how we stimulate economic growth through our members and where they decide to either who they decide to hire and where they decide to have their operations. Secondly, our second priority is always to be what we call first responders to our elected leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And examples of that would be the work we did with the mayor during the time of COVID, where we created and stood up an organization to help small businesses who were shut out,
mm-hmm.
PPP loans and other ways to make sure they could get capital during the time that they were out of work. And also another example is the work we helped with our former mayor and others do as we worked on fixes for our police and fire pension system.
Okay, okay.
And then lastly, our third priority is to do this in a connected and collaborative manner.
Mm.
Since I joined in 2019,
okay.
I'm working hard to make sure that we're not seen as an organization that we try to do things on our own. We have great partnerships with the Chamber, with the Black Chamber, with the regional Black Contractors Association.
Okay.
John Proctor beats me up all the time when we talk, but we enjoy a great relationship and promote and advocate for what they do as well.
Okay.
As a way of saying we're a voice, one of the many voices of the business community, but a voice that can be influential and can be helpful where we think we're needed.
Yeah.
All for the benefit of the entire Dallas, not
okay.
just maybe one particular part of Dallas.
Okay, let me jump in on that. Now, again, being a Dallas native, growing up, and the negative parts that I used to hear, even though the Dallas Citizen Council was doing some good stuff, the African American community saw the group as a bunch of only white males who were making decisions in the dark, in the corner, but it impacted the whole city of Dallas. That was kind of the going opinion in the community. But when you look at the Dallas Citizens Council today, yourself being, let me get this right. Are you the second African-American CEO or the first or what?
I'm the first.
You are the first CEO. You're the first African-American CEO. Now, like you said, there have been a few African-American members before. I think, if I'm right, Coma Cottrell back in the day
was the first CEO, African-American CEO, to be a member of the Citizens Council. And since then, we have had several. In fact, three African-Americans are on the board of the Citizens Council right now: Ron Kirk, Fred Prepaul, and Darren James, who is the CEO of KEI Architects and is the board chair of Fair Park First.
Okay.
And David Huntley, who is the chief compliance officer for AT&T.
Okay.
But more importantly, when you look at the landscape of Dallas today versus 1955 or 60, these are not as many local companies. The CEOs of these companies come from all over the country. They're not necessarily native Dallasites.
Oh, that's an interesting point. See, I hadn't considered that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so people have a much broader perspective.
Yeah.
And our reality is, we are a much more diverse community, and in the business community, we have to be reflective of that also.
Right.
We have to both do it not just in lip service, but in the substance of what we do, the things we advocate for. We care about diversity, equity, and inclusion. We care about racial equity in terms of making sure, frankly, when we say inclusive growth, that places in Dallas that have been locked out of opportunity, we have to do everything we can to make sure we advocate to make sure there's economic inclusion. That's why I was harping on the fact that this is an opportunity for Hispanic and African-American contractors to get meaningful economic opportunity out of the construction dollars and other service providers that go along in the construction process.
Okay.
As a means of saying that creates inclusive growth.
Mm.
And I think there's no better organization than the Citizens Council, maybe given our history and given the members who currently serve on the Citizens Council, that we advocate for that.
Okay.
Because that can only make Dallas better, and that can only help us address what we call the 85-15 imbalance, where 85% of the tax revenues from Dallas come from north of I-30 and 15% come from south of I-30.
Huh.
But 60% of the land mass for the city of Dallas is south of I-30.
Wow. Oh, my God. I didn't realize.
We need to advocate the things that help address that imbalance and create more opportunity.
Absolutely. Okay, now I want to talk about diversity. And again, I said the perception, well, not the perception, it was the reality in historically that the group was all white males. But now I think your whole operation, you've got like about, seven or eight executives, and then you've got about 20-something board members, and then you've got about seven or eight ex officio people.
Yeah, we've got about 170 members total.
Okay, 170 members total. But now you've got like about five or six women, which you didn't have before. You've got four or five African-Americans. We're going to talk about black women, too. We're going to talk about black women because we still need to do some work. We got to talk about black women.
We definitely need to do some more work. I'll come back a year from now. You'll see our numbers will be well up above where they are, just as I'm working to attract those senior-level executives who run these companies to join the Citizens Council, as well as Hispanics.
Okay.
We're excited that our next board chair, starting in January, will be Arcelia Acosta.
Right. I was encouraged.
And she's been very involved with Citizens Council for years. She's going to be a great leader for us. Again, it's both. It's not just the representation just to show her on a picture. It's about the additional perspective and value that each of our members can bring, because you bring your whole set of experiences to your leadership opportunities.
So she, you upcoming year, you have a female chairwoman elect, and she will be filling that chair in the upcoming
in January.
So that's a step. I mean, that's a climb up the ladder. Now you got to continue to work on bringing in African American women.
Right. We have a lot more work to do, and we have, as you look at the changing landscape of Dallas, our CEOs are, who our executives are, as people move here for great opportunities, it's all sorts of people, Asian, African American, men, women, you know, from every part of the country, every part of the world that you could imagine. And the more we attract all of them to the work of how we make Dallas better, we don't want a company to move here and just say, oh, it's great to be here because it's inexpensive and it's a great airport. We want them to dig in and say, what are the challenges and how do we start addressing them?
Let me just real quickly ask this. With immigration being such a Texas border issue, I mean, I don't know, does the Dallas Citizen Council weigh in on any of that? I'm just curious, just out of curiosity.
We haven't, beyond saying that we know responsible immigration policies are appropriate and we need to quit talking about it and legislators at the state and federal level need to do something about it. Now,
okay.
What I mean is this country thrives and has grown because of immigration over the years.
Okay.
We are a country of immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to find ways to make sure that we make it, that there is a very direct and easy way for people to understand how to immigrate to this country.
Okay.
You know, there's a whole lot of infighting about what should be happening at the border, but it's much bigger than that. It's,
okay.
We have big immigration needs always for scientists, all kinds of people that do things that can add value to our economy. And so it's a much broader discussion, but it all impacts business because there are people coming here for work.
Yes, such a key point. I want to just touch on real, real briefly because we are getting close to our closeout time. Some of the historical achievements of the Dallas Citizen Council, founded in 1937, mainly by Robert L. Thornton, and we know the freeway is named for him now. They did work, and I'm going to just point out some things that related to the African-American community. In the mid-40s, they made a big push to help raise funds for black colleges in Texas. They, in the early 50s, the Citizens Council did a lot to push forward the need for housing for African Americans in Dallas, and they supported Bishop College, even though they hadn't come to Dallas yet, but they was part of the historically black college effort. They were real big in building Central Expressway back in the 60s. They began to do a lot about backing peaceful desegregation. C.A. Tatum Jr. was a big leader in that. They did this film, Dallas at the Crossroads, which I remember being shown around. And then when, of course, during the Kennedy, and I didn't know this, that the John Kennedy was on his way to a luncheon with the Dallas Citizens Council when he was assassinated. I knew he was going to a luncheon. It hadn't clicked in my head that that's where the luncheon was. And then, of course, they did a lot to build Loop 12, which was viewed as a loop around the city, did a lot to help with the Dallas County Community College District, and that then they had a wave of first Hispanic member in 70, a first woman member in 77, and the first Macomb Cottrell being the first African-American member in 81. So a lot of stuff. Done, but it, you know, the community doesn't always tune in. So,
right. Well, I think you have to balance that with the other negative perceptions that we've had, and I think what we have to do is that we have to keep showing up in places where business leadership can help create more inclusive growth. We can't undo the past, but what we can do going forward is continue to say, the more we have more inclusive growth, the more we have more economic inclusion, and the more business is an advocate for that, large companies, it creates more opportunities for black and brown people, to be very blunt. And I think that's what it's fair to say that, and that I think that only reaps benefits for everyone. And I think the Proposition A is another way where we can show the manifestation of that by making sure that economic inclusion, once citizens vote for this, that we see that small businesses, minority-owned businesses, women-owned businesses have the opportunity to get a piece of the economic pie that comes from this in a way that makes our community better and stronger.
Very good. Now, as we get ready to say adios, we just need to know a little bit more about yourself. Let's see, where were you born? How did you decide to go to Morehouse? And what did you choose as a career? Go ahead.
I grew up in Griffin, Georgia, small town, the home of cowboy legend, the late Rayfield Wright.
Okay.
and had a lot of different thoughts about where I would go to college. My parents were educators, so I knew I was going to college.
Hey, okay.
No discussion there. As I looked around, given the environment I've been in public schools in my hometown, a small town, I wanted a different environment.
Yeah, yeah.
Morehouse provided an environment for me to be around a strong group of men who were intellectually curious, but a place where I felt I could have 4 great years to learn. So I went there and majored in finance and then went to graduate school at Northwestern University in Chicago, in Evanston, Illinois, and then worked for what was then NCNB, but became Bank of America in Atlanta and Charlotte. Met a girl in college who was from Fort Worth, Texas.
Get out! Hey!
We lived in Atlanta until 1998, moved here in 99.
Okay.
We've been married for 28 years. We have 2 teenage children who are both part of the Dallas DISD school system.
Okay.
And they're enjoying their experiences. And, you know, Dallas has become home for us. And we never thought we'd be here. We thought we'd live in Atlanta our whole lives.
Right.
But I got the opportunity to come work for John Ware when he left the city and created a partnership with Tom Hicks and the partners at Hicks News. And so I worked there for almost 20 years before I got involved in civic work. So that's how I got here. Been in Dallas for 23 years, and this is home. We're having a good time.
Very good. Any other issues, not necessarily even related to anything we've talked about already, but things you would just like to put out there for public consideration? Any other points you want to make?
The only other one is as we think about economic inclusion, I don't have the answer, but the more we can engage companies and philanthropy and our public sector, our colleges and the city, to try to help with our workforce challenges. Now, I'll be real quick about this. It's our struggling young adults who are making $12 an hour.
Yeah.
They can't quit that $12 an hour job to go get training to make $20 an hour. So we've got to figure out a way create a bridge for those persons to get reskilled and upskilled so they can obtain a living wage. The more we do that, the better our entire community will be. So that's something I continue to think about, and we convene a lot of our thought partners on that. But this is going to require money, and it's going to require effort. But I think if we do that, we'll be a city like no other.
Let me ask you this real quick. Does the Dallas Citizen Council, you mentioned that you collaborate with other organizations. Do you collaborate with DISD?
Oh, yes. I meet with the superintendent at least once a month.
Okay.
We champion her efforts and also former Superintendent Hinojosa's efforts with PTEC, which the Pathways to Technologies program, which allows our young people in DISD to have internships while they're in high school. And so, again, that benefits our employers, my members, but it benefits our young people because they can have dual enrollment for community college, but they can also have an opportunity to get a job.
Thank you so much for visiting with us. Our heads have expanded, and we are encouraged and proud to have you represent the city with your input on the Dallas Citizens Council, a stellar, historic group in Dallas where ethnic cultures were not in history represented, but They are now. and they are now. And we are moving forward with that. You're going to work on bringing in African-American women on your council.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. Go forward and conquer. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. That was W. Kelvin Walker. And he is the CEO of the Dallas Citizens Council, a nonprofit organization of more than 150 CEOs and top business leaders in North Texas. And they come together and they do a lot of stuff behind the scenes. And as I mentioned, historically, it used to be all white males making these major decisions about Dallas, but it's not that way anymore. We have African-American representation. We have ethnic representation. Former Mayor Ron Kirk, excuse me, let me kind of just get a little water here. Excuse me. We have former Mayor Ron Kirk, who used to be on it. Coleman Cottrell used to be on it. The late John Ware was a member. We have an upcoming chairwoman-elect who's going to be chairwoman beginning in January. So they're doing a lot of reconstruction within the organization, all for the benefit of our city. And Kelvin Walker was here today to encourage voters to vote yes on Proposition A at the bottom of the ballot. And he said, don't get discouraged. He said, after you're going through all of those candidates and everything and checking off who you're going to vote, but when you get down to the bottom, you're going to say yes for Prop A because it will benefit lots of renovation at the State Fair of Texas and the surrounding community of South Dallas Fair Park, and none of it, no taxes will increase. The local residents will not have to pay any taxes to get these things accomplished because it will be a tax on tourists who stay at local hotels and motels, and it will be a tax on them, but it will not be a tax increase for local. And the same method was used for building the American Airlines Center, which there was no tax increase for local residents. So what's the harm? What's the harm? Yeah, we want that. And the Dallas Convention Center, the K. Bailey Hutchison Dallas Convention Center, will be renovated. Now, you know, it's been sitting there vacant and unused, but now this money will renovate that facility, which will expand it and bring a lot of economic development. So, yeah, we want to support Prop A. And we announced also that there will be two upcoming events that will give us more information about this, and that's tomorrow at 10:30, October 20th, at St. Luke Community United Methodist Church, and various speakers, the St. Luke pastor Ricky Butler and Linda Mayberry will talk, and Councilman Adam Valzadua will talk. And then next Thursday, October 27th at 10 a.m., at Two Partners Restaurant will be a community-wide advocacy event that will talk about the need for voting and this whole Prop A necessity, and various community leaders and elected officials will be there. So we want to support all of that. So I wonder, while we're waiting for our next guest, I wonder if we can play a little music interlude. I wonder, can we play a little music interlude while we're waiting for our next guest, and then we'll see what's going on there. So let's see if we can hear some music. And while we're doing that, while we're waiting. Oh, wait a minute! I see our guest. So you know what? I think we'll wait. I think we'll wait on the music. We'll wait on the music, and let me tell you who our next guest is, and I think this is going to be an interesting conversation, and we'll get ready for our next guest, and guess who it will be. Okay, everybody, we'll go ahead and bring her in. And I don't want you to say anything yet, but we see who our next guest is. And I'm hearing a little bit of an echo. I don't know what that is, but I'm hearing an echo. Let's see, what could that be? Well, anyway, I'll go on while we try to clear up what that is. Let's see. Oh, but anyway, our guest is Deborah P. Kane. Deborah P. Kane. And we'll let her say hello in a minute, but I'll tell you who she is. I think I'm getting some help here to see what might be going on with my, this is my friendly producer. And can you figure out why we're echoing here? Can you hear it?
I'm going to take a break. Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Okay, we're going to take just a brief break, Deborah P. Kane, because we want to try to get rid of that echo if we can. Okay, we're going to play a little music while we try to get rid of it. So, Deborah P. Kane, you can take you some drinking some water or something while we try to get rid of the echo. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I moved my phone away from you.
Everybody, this is Deborah P. Kane, and she is here to talk to us about black women and where we stand in society today. She is a passionate food connoisseur with a love for healthy eating, and her goal is to widen her message of the healing properties of eating healthy, a healthy lifestyle. And she's poured a lot of her energy and planning and activities into changing our whole approach toward eating and healthy living. She is CEO of Deborah's Healing Kitchen. Deborah's Healing Kitchen. She's also an author, and her well-known book is The Beginner's Guide to Healthy Living. And she does a lot of work with public schools, and she visits different groups and talks to them about the need for redoing our approach to living, to eating. She's on the board of the African American Museum and the Dallas Leadership Foundation and various organizations. So we're really looking forward to talking with her. So good morning. Or is it still, or is it noon yet? It's noon yet. So good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Well, looking forward to getting our conversation going. Now, you recently wrote a column. And Cheryl Smith, the publisher of Texas Metro News, Garland Journal, and iMessenger Media, she ran your column in a recent publication, and it was called Black Women Speak. Now, you were inspired to write this column by a poem that you read by the late stage and screen actress, poet, author, playwright, activist, and graduate of an HBCU university, Dillard University, and her name is the late Dia Richards. I loved her acting, and I know I'm not alone, Dia Richards. And she wrote a poem by that same name, Black Women Speak. Now, she is well known for her role as Sidney Poitier's mother in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. Now, everybody saw that movie. She was the mother in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. Now, Bea Richards was nominated for an Oscar and a Golden Globe, and she won a Tony and an Emmy. And by the way, she's also a friend of Dallas, and she visited here more than once with the Black Academy of Arts and Letters, and she was brought here by founder Curtis King, who was a friend of hers. So this poem, as I said, was a book and a play, and it talked about the very complicated relationship of Black women and white women through our history, and particularly during the period of slavery, where both groups of women were, whether acknowledged or not, Bea Richardson exposed us as the white women and Black women were slaves, enslaved people of white men at that time. So I want to ask Deborah P. Kane, what inspired you to write this column about Black Women Speak based on the writings and life of Bea Richards?
Well, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate the invitation to talk about this. I was really inspired. Curtis King hosted, or actually directed, my daughter Abedi Jewel Haynes to do a one-woman show.
Get out, and, okay.
And so actually she recited with much passion and conviction this poem.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when all these different things started, well, all these different things happening in the world, particularly in this country, when I was thinking about, you know, the whole Roe versus Wade being overturned, and I was thinking about gun violence and all these things, who better to speak about what is going on in this country than a Black woman? Because this country was built on our backs.
Yeah, yeah.
And I say that in my open letter.
Okay.
Because I want us, you know, this is really written to us.
Mm-hmm.
I want us to realize who we are and our contribution. And so because of that, we have a responsibility to speak up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And specifically, not to just speak up, but to encourage our younger people to get involved in voting.
Yes.
And to vote intelligently. Mm-hmm. They need to know why they're voting, what they're voting about, and how voting affects them and how not voting affects them. And I think as Black women, we need to encourage and teach our younger generations to do this.
Let me jump in. You said a very electric statement about, you said, I heard you say that we need to educate them about how not voting affects us. And I just really have to hone in on that, because I don't think that younger generation, and not just the younger generation, but some older generations, I don't think a lot of people get that yet. What do you think about how not voting affects us?
Well, you know, it is designed for particularly our younger generation.
Yeah, yeah.
Not to really understand the vote, how our government works.
Okay.
It's designed for them not to know, so they won't be engaged.
Yes.
So they've taken a lot of civics and government out of school.
Okay.
So when I went to school, I had to take government, and it was explained, this is how government works.
Yeah.
So then I had a better sense of what voting means.
Yeah, yeah.
And then on top of that, just the history, and my parents teaching me the history, the community, because of course Black history wasn't in the school, but Black parents and the Black community taught the children about what happened with how we had to fight to vote.
Okay.
People died so we could vote.
Yes, yes.
Well, what I find is many younger people, you know, just saying that to them doesn't really resonate.
Yeah.
So you can link it back to what it means to you on
Okay, and let me jump in. In your introduction, I did not include that you are married to Reverend Dr. Frederick D. Haynes III, who is senior pastor of Friendship West Baptist Church. And we know that Friendship West Baptist Church is extremely active in the community and advocates for so many of the political and social needs that we have. So you live in an environment of advocacy. So now go ahead.
Yes, well, he was teaching a class, and some of the students really were not interested in voting. And I remember him telling the story of one particular young man who was, you know, a very sharp young man, bright future in front of him, but he said, "I'm not going to vote." And he kept explaining to him why this really is important, but not until he said, "If you get a ticket, or you, for whatever reason, have to stand before a judge."
Yeah.
"That judge was voted in. So you need to have a say on who you want to be in that seat." When he said that, the young man, is like a light went off. Because most people can understand, okay, most of us are going to get a ticket at one time or another.
Right.
And then just in the world we live in with all this craziness going on, you know, people understand going before a judge.
Right.
So it really connected with him.
Yeah.
So I just think we need to take time not to just say, you know, people died and were beaten so you can vote, but you got to connect it to them personally. And as Black women, we have a responsibility of doing that.
Absolutely. Now, getting back to how your piece in that we ran in Texas Metro News and Garland Journal, your piece, and it's labeled Black Women Speak, I wanted to just read a few lines from the poem. And I wish I could have heard your daughter, Albany, do this at the – very well. But the poem opens, and it was made into a book, and it's a very, very lengthy poem that deals with various aspects of that dual relationship between white women and African-American women and the role that the prima donna white woman held in historic and during the period of slavery and our subjugated position as enslaved women. But it begins, "A Black woman speaks of white womanhood, of white supremacy, of peace. It is right that I, a Black woman, should speak of white womanhood. My fathers, my brothers, my husband, my sons die for it, because of it, and their blood spilled in electric chairs, stopped by hangman's noose, cooked by lynch mob's fire, filled by white supremacists' mad desire to kill for profit. That gives me the right." So that's how Bea Richards begins her piece. Now, you say in your poem that the painful part of our history, where we had to breastfeed white babies while our babies were at home being undernourished. How did that relate to you as you were writing about that experience in our history?
Well, it relates to me because the blood of our ancestors is in my blood.
Oh.
The blood of Black women that had to go through this is in my blood, so I speak up for them too.
Yeah.
And they speak from, I say, glory through us.
Mm.
And so I just wanted to make sure that I was telling the story, because these stories aren't being told enough to our generation.
You know what? Let me jump in on that. And that's a dilemma, as I see it, because I think we elders realize that there's a missing link between what we experience and what younger generations are experiencing. But I'm at a loss for how to close that gap. I wonder what thought process do you go through and how to close the gap between what the elders want to say and the message they want to provide, and like you mentioned about the young man in Dr. Haynes' class who just had closed his mind to the thought of voting. What are your thoughts on how to maybe close that gap?
Well, I mean, the example that I just gave, mm-hmm. when my husband connected personally,
yeah.
to that young man,
right, right.
Then his light bulb in his brain went off. Yeah. And said, oh.
Yeah.
So then he was much more open. So I just think we need to think about what's going on and connecting it to our younger generation, which personally what they're dealing with.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, like, you know, they say when you look at the in the Bible, Jesus always meets people wherever they were at the time.
Mm.
Their level. So mm-hmm. we have to meet them whatever thought processes they're in, whatever world they're in, we need to speak to that.
Yeah, okay. Let me jump in on there. I like the way you say that. Whatever world they are in, we need to speak to that, because again, what you said was that brings it home, like Dr. Haynes brought it home to that young man. He put it in terms that young man could relate to. So I hear you on that.
Right. And there's so many subliminal ways that our children have really been orientated.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And almost in a state of not understanding what's really going on.
Okay.
And my husband likes to talk about everything is a system. You know, there is a system that's been built that we live under.
Okay.
Okay. And we don't even know we're under it.
Wow.
But we're operating within it, and every day it's impacting us. So that open letter that I wrote,
uh-huh.
I wanted us not to get caught up in, you know, people talk about, you know, the rights of their arms. The framers weren't talking about, you know, semi-automatic.
Okay.
Or weapons of war.
Yeah.
That wasn't what they were talking about.
I think they had muskets or something back then. Nothing with the power that we're dealing with today.
We can't get caught up in that, and people are taking that to a whole other level, which it had nothing to do with what they were talking about.
So yeah.
On one side, you talk about, I have the right to bear arms. I have the right to protect myself. Well, everybody should be able to protect themselves. But then on the other side, you're saying, well, a woman should not have the right to decide what she needs to do for her own body.
Mm.
Well, that's not about life. And it's been said many times, because if it were about life, then children in this country would not go hungry. Children in this country would have health care. So it's not about life. It's about control.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's what I want us to understand. It's about control.
About control.
So white men want to control a world they feel they're losing because there's more black and brown people.
Oh, my gosh.
And they have their grips are like this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
they don't want to lose power.
Mm-hmm,
they don't want to lose control because, mm-hmm. you know, money and power, all of that control. But the basis of, this is just my opinion.
Okay.
Why they're doing this,
uh-huh.
is because they don't believe God has made enough for everybody. So I think there's a spiritual implication here that they are out of touch with.
Yeah.
They don't believe in humanity. And when I say they, I'm not talking about everybody.
Okay.
But the system that we're in,
mm-hmm.
does not honor humanity. Does not honor that God created the world and he did everything well, but we messed it up.
Okay.
So they want control with making sure white babies, there's more white babies.
Right.
Less black.
Yes.
Less brown babies.
Yes.
And they want to tell a woman what to do.
Wow.
Because of their own insecurity.
Okay.
And they want the gun over here because they want us to kill ourselves with the gun.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
So all of these things are, I try to...
In that piece. I want to read a few more excerpts from the piece that inspired you. A black woman speaks of white womanhood. And again, Bea Richards in this is speaking as a black woman. But she's telling white women historically that your position, you're really as enslaved as I am, even though you're beautiful, you've got on fancy jewelry and nice house, nice clothes, but you are just bondage as I am. And here's what one pastor says. They brought me here in chains. They brought you here willing slaves to man. You, shiploads of woman, each filled with hope that she might win with ruby lips and sassy curl and bright and flashy eye, him to wife who had the largest tender. And then she says, they sold you here even as they sold me. My sisters, there is no room for mockery. If they counted my teeth, they did appraise your thigh and sold you to the highest bidder the same as I. And then this one other passage, she says, and you did not fight, but set your mind fast on my slavery, the better to endure your own. Oh, the girl breaks it down. Breaks it down.
She was brilliant.
She was brilliant. Absolutely.
I was not familiar with her poetry growing up, but I remember when I saw and Sister Norma,
uh-huh,
you made a statement that's not true.
Okay, what?
You said that all of us have seen Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. No, we haven't.
No, we haven't seen it. Okay.
No. Many of us in the younger generation, they don't know what you're talking about.
You know, you are so right. You are so right.
We should share these classics with other people, but I remember when my mother and I were watching the movie,
uh-huh,
she said to me about Thea Richards, she said, a lot of people don't know that is a brilliant woman.
Wow.
And I never forgot that.
Yeah, yeah.
When my daughter was, you know, doing her poetry, I was like, oh, I said, yeah, my mother always talked about she was a brilliant woman.
Right.
And
yeah.
So I remembered that. So when I would see her or hear about her, I can hear my mother say, oh, she's a brilliant woman.
Wow.
So anyway, we have all of these types of people that are our ancestors now that,
uh-huh,
we can learn from. I mean, she was amazing, absolutely amazing.
Well, and you really were on the money when you said we didn't know, you know, all of the things. I knew she was an actress, but she was an actor on stage, screen, and television. She was a poet. She was a playwright. She was an author. She was an activist, and I think she Angela Davis, she did a lot of things along with Angela Davis. And, you know, Angela Davis was very much an activist out there in the community and even went up against the legal system and what have you. And then she won, Thea Richards won all these awards, nominated for Oscar and Golden Globe, and she won the Emmy and the Tony Oh, there was one more, but I forget what it was. But at any rate, you're absolutely right. And I guess we, as you alluded earlier, we need to do a better job of passing these things on to the next generation. Now, go ahead.
She has a documentary, too. There's a documentary. I don't know if it's Netflix or, but there is a documentary on about her that's powerful.
Okay. Well, we probably, I guess, could get it on YouTube.
Right.
But a documentary about Thea, and that's B-E-A-H, B-E-A-H, Thea Richards. Yes, so we want to look that up and find that documentary. Go on YouTube and look for it because she's worthy of our acclaim.
Amazing.
Yeah. Now, I want to, in your piece, you said something that I want to relate to the audience, and you said, our voice is our weapon. You said that in the piece. And I wonder, I don't know if I can, I just wanted to see, well, I don't know. Can you see? It may not show. Yeah, there it is. That's the piece, Black Women Speak, and there's your picture. And it's in the Texas Metro News. Okay. But you mentioned.
I appreciate Cheryl Smith putting that in the paper.
Absolutely, but tell us about what you meant when you said our voice is our weapon. What did you mean?
Well, we have to speak up. You know, if you don't speak up, you're not using the voice that God gave you.
Uh-huh.
And we need to talk to our younger generation and also to people in general that just don't get it, just
okay.
don't get things going on.
Okay.
So our voice is our weapon because words are powerful.
The words
are powerful. There was an old saying when I was growing up, it's not really true. You know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That's not true.
That is absolutely not true. I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, and in the Bible it talks about the tongue and how the tongue can cut and cause, you know, life or death. And so our words are powerful. I mean, that's a spiritual thing.
Yeah.
So we need to mind our words.
You are, oh my gosh, there are so many people walking around with wounds from what somebody told them as a kid, what somebody expressed to them as a kid. And even as adults, relationships, marriages have been dissolved and crushed because of words. So you're so right. You're so right.
Right. And just think about how many of us just take stuff and don't stand up and say, wait a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why I wanted women, particularly black women, to know you have a voice.
Right.
And anyone with a conscience has a voice.
Absolutely. If you have a conscience, you have a voice. Now, here's another thing you say. You said overturning Roe versus Wade is a smokescreen. Tell us about that.
Well, as I said before, it's about control. It's about fear.
Yeah.
Because, you know, why is that wanting to control what happens?
Mm-hmm.
Wanting more, you know, white babies, less black and brown babies.
Okay.
And so it's really a smokescreen, and it's the beginning of other things being overturned.
Okay. Which is frightening. That's frightening.
Which is very, very frightening. Mm-hmm. So we just have to be real careful when things happen and say, okay, what's really going on behind this?
Mm.
So the smokescreen is, oh, we are about life. We are about this embryo is a full person. Well, first of all, if an embryo were a full person, then they would not need to incubate in a woman's body.
Okay.
And they would be able to live on their own.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's just a smokescreen. They don't care about life. They care about themselves.
And I think I want to jump in because I think you also say somewhere in there that they do all of this blustering about protecting the fetus, but once that child is born, they look the other way. The kid might be starving, the mama may not be able to support the kid, but they're not concerned about that. Like you said, this power play.
Someone was saying to me that one of the worst things is for a child to be born unwanted.
Oh my gosh! Wow.
And because you're wow. So, to me, that's a death.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Being born unwanted is a death.
Wow.
And then you have all, like you're talking about wounded people. People are walking around wounded because they feel unwanted.
Mm.
And so I just want us not, you know, black folks, don't get caught up in okie doke of the white folks.
Mm.
You know, don't get caught up in that. And of course, there are white women that I interface with that get it.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to say that. They do get it.
They do get it. Okay.
They're not controlled by the way a white man thinks.
Okay.
They get it. So we all of conscience need to speak up and speak out and say, this is a lie. You don't care about life.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in the state of Texas when we have all these uninsured children who can't even get decent health care.
Wow.
How is that about life?
How is that about life? But yet you want to bring them here. So you can mistreat them. And you make that so clear in your piece. I want to read this passage from your piece called A Black Woman Speaks. You said, if Roe is about the right of the unborn, why are black and Native American women 2 or 3 times more likely to die in pregnancy than white women, according to the CDC, isn't a woman's life important if it is about life, why don't all children have access to quality health care and food? And, I mean, you lay it out. You lay it out in there.
Yeah, that is so true. You know, there's such a huge issue with Black women dying in childbirth or even, you know, I think up to 6 weeks after childbirth. So what's going on with that? You don't say, you're not saying anything about that. You know, since you're all about life.
Right.
How come, you know, I'm a grown woman. Why can't I still live?
Okay. You also say, and this gets back to that young man in that class that where your husband had to put his understanding in a way that the young man could get it. But you say in your piece, Roe versus Wade and gun laws are all impacted by voting. And that, you know, tell us about that.
Well, as I said, people don't understand that everything, our whole existence in this country and how we live comes about from certain people being voted into office.
Exactly.
Offices of authority.
Yes.
Locally, state, national.
Yeah.
So they're all voted in. And the vote is being, hammered. They're trying to stop people from voting.
Oh, my God.
That's right.
Listen, let me jump in. I had the TV on this morning, and there was film footage in Florida of Governor Ron DeSantis having put out an order, and the police were literally in today's age going and arresting folk, handcuffing hands behind their back because they voted. And supposedly there were a few little discrepancies in their eligibility. Those people were handcuffed and arrested. And even the police, in this film footage that was on TV this morning, the police were apologetic about it. They were saying things like, oh, I know I got to do this. I know all you did was vote. I know, I'm sorry, but I got to arrest you. The police looked visibly embarrassed because they had to go out and arrest people because they voted. Not murderers, not someone who broke through a window and injured a resident, not someone who abducted a kid, someone who voted. Oh, my gosh.
Yes, I saw that as well, and that's just another trick in their book.
Yeah.
And I think one of the commentators were saying, well, if a person receives a voter registration in the mail, to them that means I can vote.
Absolutely.
Now, you're saying just because you have a voter registration, you may or may not be able to vote because of whatever's going on. I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's evil. It's just nothing but evil.
Mm.
And that's just humiliating. And here are these citizens, they paid their dues, and now they want to participate.
Right.
In their life and how they live, and then they're taken. I mean, but also they said that really this was a tactic used by, you know, the government, people who are voting, and mostly Democratic people, because there were some people that are Republicans that were white who did the same thing with the same type of background. They didn't pick them up. So my thing with those police officers, they said, oh, we're so sorry, we have to do this. First of all, no, you didn't have to.
Okay.
I'm sure across town there was some crime being done, and you could have been over there picking them up. So, no, you didn't have to go do that. You could have found a way to stand up.
Yeah.
Have a spine and say, I'm not doing that.
Right. Yeah.
You know, sometimes we just have to have a spine and say, no.
Yes. Yeah. And that takes me back to George Floyd. Now, My interpretation on the George Floyd, where the white officer had his knee on the neck of George Floyd until he literally died, and those other officers, it was widely reported that one of the officers did say, and they were under the authority of the Chauvin, Officer Chauvin, who had his knee on Floyd's neck, but they were underling officers, new recruits, and they felt pressured to follow their superior officer. And one of them said, well, don't you think we need to let him up and turn him over? And Chauvin said, no. So they followed his order. But I'm encouraged that as a result of what happened, a policy was changed where now if an officer, and I don't know if that's international or just in certain areas, but now if an officer believes that his superior officer is directing him wrong or one of his fellow officers is doing the wrong thing, they are liable if they don't speak up. So I was encouraged by that.
Right, right. Because that doesn't even make good sense.
No, it doesn't. You're standing there watching this man die, and yet you're powerless to do anything. But now it does relate, in my view, back to the military where, you know, we were for many years with, and I don't know what the military standard is right now, but under officers can get court-martialed if they go against their superior officer. I'm hoping that there has been some sort of a redesign on that policy because superior officers are just as human as everybody else and they can make mistakes.
Right. No, yeah, and I hope so too because, you know, you need to let somebody have some integrity.
Absolutely you do. Absolutely you do. Now, I wanted, we're winding down, and I did want to just get to the final points of the piece you wrote, and I want to read this. You said, we must galvanize our people in the spirit of activists and educators like Fannie Lou Hamer, Ida B. Wells, Mary McLeod Bethune, Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm, and so many more black women that changed history. Oh, wow. Those are such powerful examples that you give.
Yes, they stood up in their time, and even though they were women, and even though sometimes they were small women, I mean, they still had power.
Yeah.
And they used their power and stood up, and it was not easy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, first of all, they were women. Second of all, they were black women. And those two things meant to other people, you were nothing.
Oh, my gosh. Oh,
but
my gosh.
They were something. They speak through history. So, to me, it gives us the power to go forth and do what we need to do, you know, to make things better. And, you know, I think one of the things about saying I want my children to have it better than I had.
Yeah.
But what is really better?
Huh.
For me, better is not necessary things, but better is to live in a better society that honors the humanity in a person.
What is better?
Better is when black people treat each other with respect and when black people are respected by others.
Wow. Well, and, you know, I, gosh, you and I agree on so many things. I think parents over time kind of got off track because, like you just said, we say, I want my children to have better than I had. But we kind of overdid it in that we kept them from experiencing many of the negative things of society, for lack of a better word, that would have made them stronger and made them more realistic of what really goes on in life. We protected them too much. And so we grew up a generation of weaklings. And I think that's on us. And all because, as you just said, in our head, we were saying, I want my kid to have it better. But you said, what is better?
Right. What is better? And, you know, I was very sheltered.
Yeah.
I was very sheltered. At the same time, my parents talked with me a lot about things happening around me, and then I think what really for me was such a blessing, and I had no idea about this.
Right.
My parents really built into me self-esteem.
Okay.
And affirming who I am through love. And then the other thing I did not have to deal with, which I think has a huge issue with where our kids are now, we didn't have the internet.
Oh, my gosh.
We weren't bombarded by all of this information.
Oh, my gosh.
Good or bad. So my brain was protected.
Yeah.
So even our children that are in a much better situation as far as, you know, loving parents and all that, but then you have the internet, social media.
Yeah.
Which that will corrupt your mind. You don't
know
it.
Oh, my gosh.
So even though the internet has, you know, has positives, it really has done a job on our kids.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, I have to take a deep breath on that one. I tell you.
The emotional development has been stunted because of social media.
Yeah.
So you're not talking to people.
Right.
You're texting. You know, you're not verbal.
You're not having that human interaction.
Right.
Yeah.
And so your socialization is not the same.
Right.
So we have to deal with, okay, at home, what are the child getting? But then they're exposure to all this other trash.
Oh, my God. Okay, we've got about 10 minutes left, but I wanted to get to the point that you wind up your piece with. You give, you say, I implore black women of conscience, and you give six main points. Point number one, educate ourselves and our children about local, state, and federal elections. Number two, support politicians with a track record of supporting justice issues. Number three, encourage all people, encourage all people we connect with to vote. Number four, do not succumb to hopelessness. That's kind of tough. Number four, do not succumb to hopelessness. Number five, donate to candidates with a clear interest in equity for our community. And number six, understand we cannot be a one-issue voter. Look at the totality of the issues each candidate represents and if they reflect justice for us. And then you sign it. What are your thoughts on when you were putting those points together? Absolutely.
I have to say this. So I did consult with several people that I really respect to be some dynamite women.
Yeah, yeah.
One being my husband.
Okay.
And so while I was putting all of this together, they really made me think deeply about what I was saying.
Right.
And so I revised it about three or four times until it just got right.
Until it sang. Until it sang.
So, yeah. So I'm grateful that God put it on my heart.
Yeah.
And
right.
I want as many people to see it as possible. I'm going to see if we can get it out to more places before, you know, the vote.
Absolutely.
And I want it to be, and you know, what I'm finding out, if you do things too far in advance, like a month in advance, we forget. But I'm saying if I can have this out about 3 weeks before, then maybe that people will remember it and say, oh, yeah, because, you know, we have very short attention.
Oh, man, do we ever. Do we ever. Okay, so as we go, any other points, not necessarily on this issue, but any issue while we've got the attention of the public, any other issues you want to put out there, any other views or comments you want to make, or anything that we didn't touch on that you want to wrap up with as we leave?
Well, I appreciate that. Of course, the vote is so important for so many reasons. Mental health is a huge issue.
Oh, wow.
We all have suffered from, you know, COVID, economy. So I just want us to look for ways of making sure mentally we are dealing with our emotions. Our brain is so important.
Yeah.
And so we need to be open to counseling. I tell people, you know, sometimes you might go to a counselor and it doesn't work. Well, there's another counselor.
There's another one. Yeah.
Well, counseling didn't work for me. We only went to one person.
Absolutely. Oh, so key. So key.
If you want help and you want healing, you got to fight for it.
Okay.
It's a fight. You got to say, oh, wait a minute. Somebody's going to help me.
Okay.
Okay. So I think as a black folk, we need more counseling with people that can feed us and help us to think clearer.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, the spiritual base, you got to have a spiritual foundation. foundation.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
The world is turning so far away from that.
Yeah.
We've got to go back to what has sustained us this far.
Okay.
For a black church.
Mm.
And it worked for black folks, you know, in the spiritual.
Mm.
We would not be here.
No foundation.
If it weren't for, you know, the brothers and sisters on the continent of Africa who knew who God was before they saw any white folks.
Oh, wow.
You know,
oh, wow.
So I'm saying all this is in our blood.
Yes.
We need to pull that back up.
Yes.
You know, we have these computers right now, but a computer is nothing but a replication of the brain. And we have a brain. And it's not this hard computer.
Mm.
God gave us our own computer, and we need to pull up in our memory those things that have sustained us.
Deborah P. Kaines, we are so grateful that you cleared our time on your busy schedule to visit with us and bring home the points that you made in your piece, Black Women Speak, and the importance of us encouraging younger generations and even those of our own generations who are not realizing the power of the vote. Deborah P. Kaines is the leader of Deborah's Healing Kitchen. And she's a food connoisseur, and we are grateful to her. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
All right.
To you.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, everybody. I mean, Deborah P. Kaines really wrapped it up. She wrapped it up, and we got to take those marching orders because we got a lot to do. We can't sit and be complacent. We cannot. So let's see. We've got just a few minutes, and I kind of just wanted to mention a few things. We know that Harambe is coming up on the 29th, Saturday, October 29th, and that will be at the Martin Luther King Center. There will be all kind of activities for children. They don't have to go door-to-door for Halloween. You can go to Harambe. They can get the candy and the goodies and all that. Also, Friendship West, we just had First Lady Deborah P. Kaines, but her church family, Friendship West, will also have an alternative to Halloween fall Faith and Family Festival, and that will be Sunday, October 30th, from 11:30 a.m. until 3:30 p.m. at Friendship West Baptist Church, 2020 West Wheatland Road in the Oak Cliff area. There will be costume contests. There will be game trucks. There will be food trucks. There will be bounce houses. There'll be treats for the young children. So a lot's going on there. So go to that. There will be also on Saturday, the 29th at 11 a.m. at the Black Academy of Arts and Letters, a tribute to the irreplaceable Thomas Muhammad, who was a extremely valuable community advocate. And he will be, there will be a memorial celebration of life for him. And early voting will start October 24, early voting Monday, October 24. And we want to be sure to get in on that. And I hope that everybody got signed up, which was the last day to register, was October. And so, Teddy, we're not going to try to hear Teddy Pendergrass unless we can get him on real quick. But Teddy, he might be able to have a couple of minutes to come on. There's so much hatred. Y'all know that. War. Y'all know that. Poverty. You know that. We got to wake up the teachers. We're making a new way. Maybe the students will listen.
Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed.
No more sleeping in bed.
No more back to thinking, time for thinking again. World has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children to jump the very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it now.